Well, greetings once again to everyone out there at TFMR. We have for you another one of these special Sunday edition weekend podcasts today. And this is going to be kind of a fun update. If you remember back in late June, I introduced you to Brian Slesarchuk and his company, K92 Mining. This was a real interesting new venture that I wanted to bring to everybody's attention, primarily because they had purchased a property from Barrick, and they're ready to go into production as soon as August. And so now here we are in October, and I thought, what a great time to get back in touch with Brian, have him bring us up to speed on their progress, have him answer a few of the questions that came up last time, and assess where we might go from here. So Brian, hey, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to visit with us again.
Craig, thanks a lot for having me on.
All right, my friend, let's give everybody a recap. I'll post the link to our previous discussion on this page if people want to listen to that first so they can kind of bring themselves up to speed. But tell everybody again about K92, the property, where you found this, where it came from, how you acquired it, and then the team that you've put together, because that's always so important for now getting some gold out of the ground.
Sure, absolutely, Craig. K92 was purpose-formed to take on a project in Papua New Guinea, very high-grade gold project, large resource, existing processing facilities, existing underground mine development, great logistics. And the reason that all this was in place is that this project was owned by Barrick Gold, Barrick being the largest gold mining company in the world. Barrick originally purchased this property for $141 million, U.S. dollars, in 2007. Subsequently, invested in excess of $120 million, advancing it. Now, Barrick Gold, as many of your listeners will know, experienced a real debt crisis. They had $13 billion in debt, and they decided at the bottom of the gold bear market to liquidate, divest of assets all over the world in order to bring that debt down to manageable levels. Now, the gold market at the time we acquired this was very beat up. Nobody wanted gold. When you mentioned gold or gold equities, people were running for the hills. Nobody wanted it. We were one of the few groups out there looking for gold assets at a time when Barrick needed to sell. So we were able to pick this up right at the bottom of the market. And because of all the significant investment from Barrick, we were able to purchase what essentially was a turnkey operation. Now, since that point, we've gone in, done some enhancements, some refurbishment to the mill, the mine. And with that, I'm really proud to say that the technical team on site just announced that we've started gold production ahead of schedule, on budget, and that's a real testament to the guys on site in Papua New Guinea. Now, the team that has been built around this project reads like a who's who of the mining industry. The CEO is a fellow named Ian Stalker, and Ian's very much an operator. He's a true mining operator. For the last 35 years, he's put 10 mines into production from pre-feasibility stage all the way up into actual production, and he's built those 10 mines on time, on budget. Ian was the vice president of Goldfields when it was the fourth largest gold producer in the world. But outside of all of his operational success on the ground, Ian's really well known corporately for his role as the CEO of Uraman. He was the CEO of Uraman when that mining company started off as a microcap and 3 years later was purchased for $2.5 billion by a major. So he's no slouch at all in the M&A department. The chairman of our company is Tuki Angus. Tuki is just a legend in the industry. He is also the chairman of Nevsun, one of the highest grade open pit producers of its kind in the world. Tuki was a founding director of Ventana Gold, was a founding director of First Quantum, founding director of Bema, just a long storied history in the business. Two technical guys that I've got to point out are Doug Kerwin and Alex Davidson. Alex was the executive vice president of Barrick when Barrick purchased this project for $141 million, invested $120 million into it. He was the executive vice president of Barrick in charge of exploration and corporate development worldwide when Barrick acquired this. Just a few days after K92 purchased this asset from Barrick, Alex joined our team. Technically, Alex is one of the most well-known guys in the industry, alongside of somebody else on the K92 team, Doug Kerwin. Doug was Robert Friedland's go-to geologist for a number of years in Southeast Asia, was credited with leading the discovery team at the Monster Oyu Tolgoi deposit. And these guys are involved in this project for a reason. And it's the big regional upside combined with the near-term, very high-grade and sizable situation we see around our Iromasimpa deposit and our Kora deposit. And it's John Lewins, our COO, again, a guy that's been around the industry for 30-plus years, has put mines in production all over the world. It's John. It's to John's credit that the first production has started ahead of schedule, on budget. And on the heels of that, we've just announced in the last few days that we're now conducting an assessment. We've actually completed a preliminary economic assessment on bringing a second deposit online for the first quarter of 2018.
So things are really coming together, and that's all part of what got my attention in the first place. And folks here at the site know that there's just a small handful of companies we've been trying to shine the light upon here in 2016. I want to double back at this point to the first interview we had, because everybody listened to it, and there were a handful of questions that came in from some of the folks that did their own due diligence, because that's always what this is all about. I mean, we can roll them out there and tell everybody to take a look, but boy, before anybody ever buys a share, they got to do their own due diligence. And a couple of questions came in. I wanted to see, Brian, if you could address those. One of them has to do with that property itself. You know, you mentioned that Barrick acquired it in 07, spent all this money getting it ready, but then they shuttered the darn thing in 2008. We understand why they would then sell it. I mean, it's not the best run company in the world, and all the hedging they've done, and they're beholden to the banks and everything else. But why would it be profitable now going forward? What can K92 do that Barrick couldn't, and thus make it such a great venture for you guys?
What's really interesting, Craig, is that the company prior to Barrick, a company called Highland Pacific, actually was making this mine and mill work when gold was $750. But corporately, they got on the very wrong side of a hedge book, like many companies do. Yep. That's why they actually sold to Barrick for $140 million in 2007. Now, Barrick only ran this mill for 6 months. For Barrick, Barrick was not as interested in the production, because for Barrick, 50 to 60,000 ounces annually don't move the needle. They were very focused on the big regional upside. That being said, only running the operation, the mill, for 6 months never gave them a chance to implement the upgrades that their own internal engineers recommended, that their outside consultants recommended. They just didn't have that chance. The other thing that's important to note is that when it was mined by Highland, there was only a top access to the underground mine. So everything was helicoptered in and out of that mine.
Wow.
People, equipment, explosives, etc. And that adds a whole lot of cost. One of the things Barrick did is put a big 5-meter by 5-meter access into the bottom, and now you can comfortably drive a pickup truck right from that bottom access all the way up right into the mine workings. And that is something that will really improve efficiency. I think that the other thing that's really important anecdotally to note is that Alex Davidson himself, the executive VP of Barrick, who okayed this purchase for $140 million, further invested $120 million into it. I think it's indicative of Barrett's technical opinion on this project that he joined K92 just days after we acquired it. And remember, in the independent technical report done on this property, it's noted that Barrick viewed this project very highly on its technical merits on a global basis.
Let me give you another question that came up then, too. Someone was worried about your exploration success and noted that you don't have a lot of measured and indicated resources. And just wondered if maybe you could address that and why that is.
Sure. I think that a big answer to that question, which was posed a couple of months ago, has now been answered just over the last 3 days as to how this project looks economically. And that's due to the fact that just 3 days ago, we announced the results of the PEA on the Kora gold deposit. That PEA is very robust. It indicates 108,000 ounces produced per annum, free cash flow over 9 years of $558 million, with cash costs per ounce of $547 and all-in sustaining costs per ounce of $619. This gives that project an NPV using a 5% discount rate of $415 million U.S., and that is on the Kora deposit. As far as measured and indicated ounces go, what companies normally do in this type of environment is keep 5 to 6 years ahead of themselves in the M&I category. And we've got that based on our initial production profile. Remember, in year one, we've guided production targets of 52,000 ounces. We've now said that in year two, we're targeting to be up at 108,000 ounces plus. So based on the initial production profile, we have 5 to 6 years of production ahead of us in the M&I category. However, as we ramp that production up, we'll be looking to convert more ounces from the inferred category to that measured and indicated category. Now, on top of that, I want to point out that not only do we believe we have a great conversion that will occur with those ounces from category to category, but remember, Kora is wide open for expansion. Not only is Kora strongly mineralized at the extent of all drilling, but it's wide open in every direction, and the only deep hole below the known Kora ore body intersected a big wide cut of high-grade mineralization, 30-meter cut of mineralization, 350 meters below the known ore body. So that represents a possible vertical extension to the Kora deposit. So not only do we think we'll grow the measured and indicated, but we think we'll grow the totality of the deposit. We're targeting threefold, fourfold, fivefold, and only the drill bit will tell us. It's already sizable. We know it's high grade. How much bigger it's going to get will depend on the drill bit, but the indications are there that it's got a lot of potential to grow.
Cool. Let me ask you one more question, if you don't mind, and this had to do with potential dilution of the shares, that there were some 35 million warrants outstanding and a lot of the, some, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but maybe 20,000 ounces of gold were spoken for in the first 3 years. Can you address that, particularly the dilution factor and how that might impact things?
Sure. Again, just in the last week, there was an answer to that by way of a press release from the company. We, due to the buoyant trading in equity, we were able to force the acceleration of 10 million warrants, which brought another 7.5 million in cash into our treasury. So when we came to trade on May 25th, we were fully funded for the production restart. Since May 25th, due to warrant exercises and two financings, we have been able to inject a further $26 million into our treasury. And what that $26 million will give us is the ability to target accelerated resource expansion and accelerated production profile expansion. So at this point, the share structure, because of the warrant exercises that have occurred, it is much simpler. We have 113 million shares issued, 157 fully diluted, but with a very healthy balance sheet, no debt, and the ability to not only be funded through production, but also through a fairly aggressive expansion program through which we're targeting to expand the resource. And I'll also note that in the two financings that we conducted, Craig, since that May 25th trade date, the first one was for $12.5 million at $1 per share. The second one, we did a $2 million financing at $1.17 per share, and that was to Ross Beatty. And Ross is a very well-known investor in the mining space, and I think it speaks volumes that he was the single investor in that round. So these two rounds at $1 per unit, at $1.17 per unit, have really strengthened the balance sheet as we go forward. And due to the warrant exercises and our ability to accelerate them, there's just not that much overhanging the market now, and it's a lot simpler share structure than it was 2 months ago.
Sounds great. What about, again, you said production did, in fact, start in August, just like you expected, right on budget. And then you also mentioned, and just to remind everybody, this new economic assessment that just came out that potentially doubles your what you're going to be able to produce?
Yes, we guided originally as to production in December. Then we started to get a little more aggressive with that target once we realized how well the guys were doing on site. We ended up in production. We've announced that in the last 10 days. We are now a gold producer. We're in gold production at the Irumafimpa deposit. Less than 6 days after announcing that, we announced that we've completed a preliminary economic assessment on the deposit known as Kora, just 700 meters away from Irumafimpa. It's a deposit that we'll use the same processing facility for, and that Kora deposit is targeted to come online in the first quarter of 2018. So now, not only are we in gold production today, but we've given guidance and visibility as to how we plan on growing that production profile. And at Irumafimpa, we're targeting 52,000 ounces per annum. At Kora, which is coming online, which is targeted to come online in Q1 2018, we're targeting 108,000 ounces per annum from Kora. And that preliminary economic assessment, the results of which came out in the past few days, gives Kora alone an NPV of U.S. $415 million. And the big thing here to remember as people look at the PEA is that the initial capital cost for Kora is so small. It's $13.84 million, which is less than the amount of cash we already have on hand at this point.
Just sounds great. Very, very exciting stuff, Brian. And a really good comprehensive update. And I know everybody appreciates you addressing some of those questions. But before we close, I would be remiss if I didn't point out, you know, that sort of like Keith Neumeyer at First Majestic Silver, you are one of the rare mining executives as president of K92 that seems to get it, you know, that understands that their core product is priced in this paper derivative scheme run by the banks and manipulated on almost a daily basis. You've seen your stock be impacted by this. I mean, when we first talked about it, we were about 80 cents a share, went all the way to $1.70 in early August. But then with gold getting smashed back through August and September, we're now back to $1.10. So all of this does have a big impact on what you do. Like I said, as we wrap up, just want to get your thoughts on gold, the gold market, if we want to call it that, and where you think prices are headed going forward.
As I always remind people, in a gold bull market, gold equities historically outperform physical bullion. And that, to me, is a big attraction of investing in companies like K92. However, when we have these short-term pullbacks or corrections in the price of gold bullion, the equities also accelerate past that to the downside. So if people are bullish on gold, now is a time to do due diligence and take a look at investing in a company like K92, in my opinion. And things are dramatically changing out there. Since we last talked, we now have Deutsche Bank being mentioned in the same breath as Lehman Brothers. Well, it's becoming apparent that the central bankers around the world, the big governments around the world, don't have the ammunition that they had in 2008. How much lower can interest rates go when you're in a negative interest rate environment in so many parts of the world? At the same time, as our central bankers in the West continue their foolhardy ways, we've got countries like China, Russia, India, gobbling up as much gold as they can get their hands on. You've seen China's inclusion now into the SDR, and that inclusion is at a level in excess of the pound, the yen. This is representing a real dramatic geopolitical shift, financial shift, and for thousands of years, gold has represented not only a true store of wealth and value, but a hedge against these uncertain financial times, which I definitely believe we are entering right now.
I think anybody listening can tell, not only is this a compelling story with significant upside, I mean, Brian's on our team. This is a guy that, like First Majestic, this is a guy we can support and get behind. It's nice to have somebody in the industry that is actually thinking globally and watching what's going on in the world. Brian, I got to tell you, it was really great to hear from you and wonderful to get this update. I wish you great success the rest of this year, and hopefully we'll get a chance to visit again soon.
Great. Thanks a lot for having me on, Craig.
Brian, it's a pleasure. And to everybody, have a great weekend.